So there are two personality profiles that have a big catharsis or epiphany or breakdown that changes everything in midlife. The hero avoidant male who has no one truly attuned to him, and the big boss reactive or disorganized woman who has no one truly attuned to her. If you have no idea what I'm talking about, check out my previous video. This video is only going to be about the woman. This woman has gone her entire life in seasons of achievement and masking. As a child, she was sensitive and smart and verbal enough to read the room and manage it whenever her sister was complaining that she didn't want to go to church, or whenever dad wasn't sufficiently commiserating with her expectant mother about Aunt Tiffany's terrible cooking. Pleasing and gossiping and keeping up appearances and never complaining about anything unless mom was complaining about it were her tickets to being seen, and she has built her identity on those things. Her parents were only human and tried their best, she was always quick to remind herself, but when she thought about it, Mom was kind of critical, and did Dad ever really greet her with anything other than, "Your mother wants me to tell you"? She has lots of Polaroids of childhood Christmases and Easters standing in insufferably uncomfortable dresses, all documenting her natural state of childhood, smiling on the outside, itchy all over and jumping out of her skin on the inside, eyes fixed straight ahead. As a teenager, she always had a job, and good enough grades, and lots of activities. By the time she graduated high school, she wasn't sure where the line was between who she really was and this robot that achieved. Was she really happy or just chasing the smile and congratulations from her boss at the pharmacy? Decades later, she'd ask herself the same question about all the guys she slept with in her teens and 20s. Did she really like them, or was she chasing their gazes and what she naively perceived as their approval? It did feel good to be noticed, though. Sex meant she was being seen and enjoyed, right? Whether she went to college or not, she was a worker. It wasn't so much that she loved her position at the hospital, but it was that working with prescriptive protocols was the perfect mix of controlled attending to others and low-level crisis that she was used to. And plus, the way some of those patients looked at her, like she was their desired source of order in the chaos, there was that dopamine she'd conditioned herself to chase. When she was first dating her husband, she found him so nonchalant and kind of dorky, like in a safe way. A guy like him would never be able to say she wasn't good enough. When she had her first baby, she thought maybe she'd start feeling more connected with her husband. But this baby wasn't glue. It was another barrier, and she could tell how much her husband resented how much she loved the baby. How strange. And during that season of masking and achievement, she wanted to ask her mom, should she feel this guilty and anxious about not having sex for 6 weeks after giving birth? Would her husband leave her? Did her mom think it was normal that he never changed a diaper? Am I being too sensitive? What is marriage supposed to be? I mean, Dad never really did this stuff, but Mom took it as a badge of honor. Shouldn't I? And whenever Mom and Dad visited, she found herself cleaning frantically, anticipating that good little girl dopamine rush. Only she never did get so much as a compliment on her lovely home. Before their visits, when she asked her husband to go get some fruit and some cheese for a platter, he'd roll his eyes. "You try to impress people too much. Relax." For what seemed like the longest season of her life, she poured her heart into those kids, working full-time, but also checking those kids' homework, going to all the soccer and volleyball and hockey games, driving their friends' places and making them snacks, giving them advice, asking their advice, making all the dinners. She never ever made them wear itchy dresses on holidays, but she did force them to give grandma a hug when they didn't want to. Where was the line between love and control anyway? Her one mission was to make their home a comfortable, peaceful environment and make those kids know they were loved. Only the comfortable environment part was hard because she was so lonely. And sometimes when the conflict avoidant mask couldn't hold on, she'd get ragey, even regrettably, in front of the kids for something she couldn't put her finger on. Maybe it was that he seemed to be actively on strike from dish duty or from making any of the meals or driving the kids anywhere. Or maybe it was because, to her, he couldn't be trusted with the kids. I mean, he'd either explode on them for something small or let them get away with murder and gang up against her rules. "Don't tell your mom. You can have this cookie before bed. Wink." Being ganged up on scared her the most. She wanted to be the good girl, even to her kids, and it killed her if he painted her as crazy or controlling. To her, the carefree bad boy she had fallen in love with had become an irresponsible Peter Pan. Or maybe it was him that wasn't attracted to her. She had put on a lot of weight. Eating off the kids' plates is how to not waste food, right? And who has time for the gym? Although that time she had killed it on Weight Watchers, actually she had lost a scary amount of weight that season, hadn't changed anything, so she stopped thinking about it. The sex, not the weight. She carried the weight like a scarlet letter, walking proof of the bad girl, and that feeling just made her frantically reach for relief in the break room candy dish even more. So she kept throwing herself into her kids and doing elaborate PTA fundraisers. Was decorating for the dance obligatory, or was it that she felt safe when she was in control? and doing science fairs. Of course, Billy couldn't write his own write-up on the water cycle with his sloppy penmanship. She'd have to type that up for him. Then one season, the kids didn't need her as much. They were either away at college or driving themselves everywhere. Was it always so quiet? She cleaned the inside of the oven, shampooed the rugs, and borrowed the neighbor's ladder to Windex even the exterior windows the first Saturday of the quiet. She walked around in circles straightening pillows that didn't need to be straightened, and none of her kids would answer their phones. At first, she just had some subtle heart palpitations, an unsteady, unstable feeling if she tried to sit down and watch some TV. And then she had some trouble sleeping. She went to the doctor. "Maybe get a sleep study," he said. "Maybe perimenopausal," he said. The doctor didn't ask about the little girl smiling in the itchy dress or the young woman who shook crying in the bathroom alone the night her postpartum stitches were removed, or the middle-aged woman writing the college essay, eyes glassy with a painful lump in her throat. He didn't ask her, and she didn't notice he didn't ask her. Wasn't that just the way it was? Her first panic attack was when she was doing nothing at all, just a rare moment of sitting on the sofa. It was like her nervous system was screaming at her, "Resist this thing called relaxing. Don't you know? Managing has been what you've been conditioning me to associate with safety. Quick, find something to control." After that first panic attack, she'd have bouts of rage. A dog. She needed to get a dog. Or maybe a self-help book. Some tips for being more efficient with her time and being more peaceful and less angry. She just needed to learn to be more productive, less lazy, and stop letting her anger escape so much. And then, here it comes. A season where one of her parents gets sick, or someone passes away, or something big happens that she can't control. The tidal wave of paralyzing terror and sometimes rage now hits her hard and often. Who was she? Where was she? Could she breathe? Was she there? Surely she was flying dangerously off a cliff because she clearly didn't have her hand on the wheel. When it hits this woman that she cannot control everything, and especially something so important as human fragility, one of two things happens. She doubles down and keeps masking and achieving, and her anxiety turns into deep despair and depression and loneliness. Social media addiction, gambling, binge eating or anorexia, substance abuse, spending and other addictions are common. It's a hard way to live. And often her nearly adult or adult children don't get it. They just wonder, "What's wrong with mom?" And she is destroyed. Often it is her adult children that implore her to go to therapy. Usually one of her kids is parentified and has been telling her for decades to just divorce dad. So, on the first session of therapy, she's so proper and she doesn't even take her jacket off. "I believe our time is up," she says with 2 minutes left. By the fourth session, she's letting herself feel stuff, sad, punctuated by angry, the familiar beats of grief trying to get out. Often she does need help with her fried central and sympathetic nervous system, sometimes in the form of medication. But she also needs to reconnect with that little girl, give her a taste of her own voice and freedom and safety that she never had. This woman's positive transformation happens with self-discovery and allowing herself to accept and grieve, and also and especially accept and grieve the ultimate reality that we only get one life. She may wake up one day and shift from, "This is the rest of my short life, what's the point?" to, "This is the rest of my short life, and this is what makes it meaningful." She might go back to the gym, but not to succeed and obsess about the number on the scale, but because Zumba makes her heart soar. She might take a horseback riding lesson. She remembers being 10 years old and actually loving the smell of the stables and the steady feel of the animal, an unpredictable massive thing, but also a thing securing her to herself and to the ground. And she might want to remind that little girl, "You can feel this. You can enjoy this just for you." She does the same thing with the dog. Her husband told her she was selfish and should have adopted the pit bull mix that had been in the shelter the longest, but he never filled out any of the paperwork. Adopting Waffles was her first act of defiance against the shoulds and her first foray into what felt like risking meaningful abandonment, always the price of rediscovering oneself. And for this woman, if she keeps accepting disorder and risk as a requirement for being alive, she gets better. And sometimes her relationships get better just with that little removed enabling and conflict avoidance and that little added assertiveness. Sometimes they don't get better. Sometimes she goes through a divorce or resolves to keep her parents at emotional arm's length. Oftentimes though, like I said, many of her next acts of defiance are actually very healing and restorative to her relationships. The first time she told her mom she'd rather not spend the afternoon gossiping and commiserating, her heart actually palpitated and her voice shook a little. She was that little girl again. But turns out her mom was excited to hear about the horse lessons and laughed a lot and even talked about the kind of music she liked whenever they did watercolor together. And when this woman begins to tolerate more and more risk, she's humble and attuned and authentic with her grown children. and they begin to heal too.